Everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Ryan, this week. Jocelyn is out. We just can't seem to get on the same show in the last 2 weeks, but you know, everybody's busy. So I'm here tonight, and I'm joined by a returning awesome guest, Josh Cook. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. How are you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good. The people on the podcast won't have noticed any of the live glitches, but hey, I do this like once every 3 months, so I'm a little out of practice.
You're doing a fine job, in my opinion.
Thank you. And you know what? No one at home will notice because a majority of the people don't join us live. But we are live, recording. This is episode 265. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Josh. We're going to talk about video games. The main reason I pulled you on was to talk about a specific game we've had a few people ask us about. And I want to save that game. I want to just sprinkle a little bit of tease at the front of
what
the show.
Could
I don't know. It could be Persona 5. Whoops, I let it slide. It is Persona 5. We're going to talk about Persona 5 on this episode. Also, it's listed on the overlay, so there's no point in teasing because it's written right there. But we are going to talk about a couple other titles before we get to the big one, which is Persona 5. And we're just gonna start off with a really quick and easy tease. The Walking Dead revealed, or released rather, it's episode 3 of The Walking Dead, A New Frontier. And yeah, it's a Telltale episode. It just came out. Are we not working?
Are we what?
No, Jim in the chat room is saying it's not working for anybody. That's unfortunate. Anyways, we're just gonna power right through.
It's a Twitch thing.
Okay, perfect. Well, anyways, ignore all that, folks. So anyway, A New Frontier, Above the Law, episode 3 came out last week, I believe. And I don't know about you, Josh. Are you into the Walking Dead video games from Telltale?
I'll have to admit, I'm not a huge Walking Dead buff.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I don't have cable, I don't watch TV or any of that jazz.
Okay.
So, like, everyone's like, oh, I can't wait for Sunday's Walking Dead. Like, yeah, I saw the first season on Netflix, it was alright, and the second season, which everyone told me, try to muscle through it, I couldn't. I failed.
Yeah.
A
lot of people have that opinion.
Yeah, I do love the Telltale games. Mm-hmm. Like, Wolf Among Us is easily within my top 10 favorite games.
Because
I think they really do a pretty good job of doing, like, some interactive story playing. And, like, the choices always feel like they weigh heavily compared to other games. So
I think a lot of folks loved The Wolf Among Us. That was sort of their first post-Walking Dead game that people really latched onto. And the rest of Telltale's offerings have been popular enough to be successful, I suppose, but not to the point where you have like critical acclaim. And I think Wolf Among Us was the last one in the Telltale sort of collection that really got a lot of critical fare, a lot of good reviews. And you know what? A New Frontier is another one of those checkbox Telltale experiences. Like, yep, this is Walking Dead. This is a continuation of the franchise. But yeah, it's good in the sense that it is a good additional episode to A New Frontier. I thought that the first two episodes that released in December were okay, like a good retread of The Walking Dead, but it's not by no mm-hmm. means season one's spectacular presentation. Obviously we're going to have a huge spoiler discussion on the next Zombies Ate My podcast, which should be recording in the next week. So if you want to check that out for more of a in-depth spoiler discussion. But the one thing I'll give it is that on a positive light, this episode felt like it was the least telltale-y video game from Telltale. It had less of the Telltale things that people don't really enjoy. And by that I mean sort of the moments where, you know, the action dies down, it goes all slow, and then it goes into the adventure mode where you're walking around and clicking on things and hearing dialogue. There wasn't a lot of that. There was, I think, zero instances where it stopped and gave you full control of the character. And I know a lot of you might be saying, like, that sounds terrible, right? It's a video game, not an interactive movie. And most would argue that Telltale games are really just that, interactive movies. where you decide right. what happens. So yeah, I don't know. Take it or leave it. That's episode 3, A New Frontier, but tune into Zamp and we'll have more on that. I played a little bit of Yooka-Laylee, but I think I'm going to save that for our topic because I didn't play a lot of it. And most of what I played has to do with what we're going to talk about in our topic. So I'll leave that. But I do want to talk about Mass Effect Andromeda, specifically, Josh, your time with Mass Effect Andromeda, because we haven't had your opinion on the show yet about this game.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. When it first launched, like, I didn't have all the gripes that everyone else kind of had about it. Like, oh, the character. For me, it was like, you know, it's a game. I'm going to enjoy it. Not every game is going to look amazingly beautiful when it first launched. And to be honest, the patch they just put out really did a good job with fixing a lot of that stuff. But, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I'm trying to, like, I am addicted to side quests. And Mass Effect Andromeda, like, when you're going down on the planets to, like, you know, make them safe to live, there's a ton of side quests.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that, like, there'd be times, like, I've put a lot of time into that game, and I'm only done with, like, 2 planets. And I'm like, oh, my God, I spent so much time in humanity's, like, still like, hey, you're still helping us, right? I'm like, but these scientists are trapped under a rock, and one of their sisters lost a data pad in the mountains where the bad guys have beacons that I have to find. And one of their beacons isn't it like, it's just so much side quests. And I'm like, oh man,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm going to finish this game. Like, I'm not disappointed in it, but I feel like it's a little much.
Mm-hmm.
That is pulling me away from really getting enthralled with the main storyline.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this has been a lot of the same issues across the board, where, you know, you have these large open world games and there's just a lot of extra stuff to do. And I know a lot of people's arguments are, well, you don't need to do the extra stuff. And then my feedback to that is like, well, then why do they put it in there? Like, is there a legitimate reason to put this fluff in there, if not just to make the game feel bigger or more lived in? And I feel like when you look at what Zelda did in comparison to what Mass Effect did, and I know Zelda has had varying opinions on the show, but Zelda was this huge open world game, but didn't fill it with fluff. It kind of left it empty in a way. And a lot of people didn't like that. But a lot of people did like that. Personally, I was one of those folks that was fine with the large open world being quote unquote empty, you know, but a lot of people didn't. And I think when this example proves that when you have this large open world and you fill it with filler, you're given the opposite to that problem. And it's the same issue where it's like, if you don't like it, so you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Unless you fill that extra space with interesting things, like, you know, on the show, Horizon Zero Dawn has come up a lot. We just did a spoiler cast last week where Jocelyn and Matt Forkham talked about it. And they loved the fact that that game had great filler. And I think that's the difference is you need. So if you look at the three, you've got 1 and 0, and then you got the middle ground, which is Horizon, that kind of does that balancing act. But it's very tough to do. And, you know, Mass Effect kind of falls on its face, but only if you get caught in that I gotta do everything, you know, mentality. And you don't. You're the pathfinder, you're busy, you don't need to worry about every little person's problem. Unless you do. I know a lot of people feel like they do, and I don't know what your experience has been, Josh, but you don't have to do every side quest, let alone every main quest on the planet to get the 100%.
Oh yeah, like I like the two planets I've done, I 100%, and I'm still spending hours on the planet. And like my worry is like when people are going, oh yeah, you don't have to do it. I'm worried that it's going to be like, okay, well if I don't have to do it, and it has no effect on the main quest, then was this just put in for filler? Like, did someone go, oh man, our main story is like 10 hours. We need to extend our game. All right, we'll throw in, you know, 15 hours of side quests. Like, I don't want to face that reality if that's the real thing, because I do enjoy the game. But it was just like, It's just so much, though. And it's funny that you mention, you know, Zelda and Horizon as things to compare it to, mm-hmm. where Persona 5 is also a fourth option.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we'll get into that later, but all four of these games coming out back to back to back, in some essence, they all have that open world feel, just done completely differently. Yeah, and it's interesting to see what's hitting and what's missing. And I'll be honest, I'm not that far into Mass Effect Andromeda. So I'm not at a point where I'm like, oh my God, I love this, I can't put it down. But I'm also not at a point where I'm like, oh my God, it's so long, I'm just going to get bored. I am enjoying the experience I've had so far. Mass Effect, I just feel like I'm more of everybody's small town hero instead of, hey, we got a ship full of people that we kind of need to take care of.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and I'm a little bit farther. I think I've unlocked 5 or 6 of the planets, but they're all different, but they're all starting to blend together, where you get to them and you find the same people, the same problems. Like you're very early on in the scope of the game, and early on you have that sense of discovery in terms of I'm going to meet new issues. But where I'm at in the game, because the way they've set it up is basically when you arrive at Andromeda, you're a year late, and they've had a chance to set up a lot of different issues, like with the Ungaran and the Exiles and the Collective and yada, yada, yada. So when you get there and you go to a new planet, you know going into that new planet what the issue is. It's either the Ungaran or the Ungaran Rebels or, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so far, for me, you know, 60 hours in, I'm not coming across a new issue to solve. It's the same problems that the Pathfinder is dealing with, except for the planet, per se. So if you're looking at the antagonists of this game, it's the planet. Every planet you launch on, I'll give you this, has a different issue, whether it's extreme cold, extreme heat, just lack of livability whatsoever. There are mm-hmm. planets that you will not colonize, but you still get to go to them and visit them. And I appreciate that, you know, varied experience, but it's very easy to get lost in the fact that there's a lot going on. And I don't know. I'm really digging the game, but I'm having a hard time sticking with it. Like, I'm going to beat it, but I'm having a hard time, like, doing what I did with Mass Effect 3, which was, I have to beat this, or yeah. Jocelyn's going to come on the show and spoil it, and I am going to be ruined because it's the end of a trilogy. That is literally the story of how we played Mass Effect 3. It was, we're going to do a spoiler cast on this date because I've finished the game. And it's like, all right, I literally finished the game 20 minutes before we recorded the episode. It was kind of like, I don't know if I'll be able to finish it in time. And she's like, well, too bad, because we're spoiling it. And it's like, ah. And, you know, all we did is talk.
You know what happened.
Yeah, and all we did was talk about the ending, right? So
right.
In this instance with Mass Effect, I know, you know, Jocelyn's been very busy. I don't know how far she's gotten, but I feel like I've started to complete some loyalty missions, and I think I'm getting to the end. It's hard to tell if I'm getting to the end, because the antagonist is not really, like, a problem. He's been around, like the Archon, I guess. And these are minor spoilers. Like, if you're, like, trying to avoid story whatsoever, obviously you've already tuned out, because we've already had the minor spoilers come across your desk. But yeah, I don't know. So where are you at in terms of the antagonists in this game?
Like I said, I just did the second planet, so it's like we're aware of his existence.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously he's, you know, causing trouble with the Ungaran, but it feels like for me it's interesting, because it almost feels like they're trying so hard to paint this guy as the antagonist that you almost kind of feel like something's going to happen. You're going to go, oh snaps, maybe he was the good guy this whole time. And like, I have that itchy feeling, because, like, I love mm-hmm. BioWare stories, and sometimes they just throw a curveball. You're like, oh, man, like, I didn't think about that. So, like, every time it kind of cuts to them and you learn about what they're doing, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess from some point of views, you could look at it and go, oh man, this guy over here, geez, get off our back. Then, like, in the very beginning of the game, when you first, you know, land on that planet with all the lightning, your character clearly says, hey, just so you know, we're the aliens here. Like, what would you do if a bunch of aliens landed on our planet with guns at the ready? Like, and it kind of makes you think, well, who is the bad guy? So I'm trying to take, like, a very, you know, optimistic approach to, is the Archon truly the bad guy? I mean, yeah, he's doing some bad stuff, but...
They, you know, as you go forward in the game, they do, they start to set him up more as a bad guy, and he becomes, you know, pretty much he's the banner child for evil in the game. I mean, like, they have a poster up for evil, and underneath is his name. Like, he's, they're not, and again, I haven't beat the game yet, and I don't know, like, that could be seen as a spoiler, but, you know, the game's pretty black and white in terms of who the bad guy is and who's in it, which is kind of weird in Mass Effect. Like, if you think back to Mass Effect 2, you know, you're working for the bad guy, you know?
Right.
And, but they don't really paint it as such until the very end, because you work for the bad guy the whole game. You know, they don't really lay it out in front of your feet until Mass Effect 3, when it's like, nah, you worked for some straight up racist terrorists. Yeah. And, so in this game, you have an alien that is coming across you, and early on in the game, they do what I was hoping they would do, which is they treat you know, coming across these aliens in a way that makes sense in a science fiction genre that is smart, like Mass Effect, like a Star Trek type. We're meeting right. These aliens for the first contact protocol. They even say that in the game. And the way they do it and they give you the choice is really cool, but it only happens twice, you know. And again, I haven't beat the game, but so far... it happens twice, and it's in the very early hours of the game.
Yeah.
And both those instances are very neat, very awesome, and worth playing, to be honest. And for me, I'm not going to spoil the mission, but I've played the best Mass Effect mission probably I've ever played, and it's maybe that's just because it's classic Mass Effect, and it feels very much like my favorite missions and interactions from the original trilogy. And it's Liam's loyalty mission. So if it pops up for you, definitely beeline that one, because its final mission is fun and quirky. And depending on how you play your character, there's some really good dialogue options in there. I don't know about you, but I play more of a quirky, always joking type character. You know, that's just the type of dialogue I like to hear. And when my character sounds like really angry sometimes, it makes me feel a little anxious, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't mean to say that. Like, I don't want to be an asshole to you. I mean, I'll straight up shoot people, you know, if they're evil, no qualms about it. It's like,
I'll just laugh about it as I pull the trigger.
Well, I won't laugh about it. I'll just be like, he's dead. Click the button. And I've actually killed.
Yeah, are you throwing out like 80s action movie one-liners?
Sometimes I am. But you know, the only time I'm evil in these games is when I have the opportunity. I've killed a couple people in cold blood. And, you know, one was definitely evil. Another one was just kind of an asshole. So, like, not even like a real terrible person. Like, they were stealing things.
Who are you?
I honestly don't know. I'm Sarah Ryder.
Yeah. It's like, for the record, they broke the law. Just, you know, maybe the punishment was a little extreme, but hey, you know what? This is the wild, wild west of the space world, so.
One of them definitely deserved it. The other one, you know, is questionable, but I think it was, in the end, I made the right call. But no, Liam's loyalty mission is definitely worth playing. Certainly beeline it to that one. I don't know about you, but how do you feel about your compatriots in this game? Do you like the people you're playing with? Like, are there people that you're specifically latching on to?
It's weird, because I want to like them.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, because I've really loved BioWare's characters, but... like, Vetra's kind of cool. I like Vetra. But all of them just feel so... like, Liam's cool. He's like a unique character that we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them just feel so, like, cliche within the Mass Effect universe. You know, like, you have, what's the female biotic? Cora.
Cora, yeah.
Yeah, like, she's like Jack, oh, with more clothes. I used to be an Asari. Yeah, I'm kind of tough. I know biotics. Like, oh, okay, well, we know that type. And, you know, then you got the quirky Asari type. And it's like, okay, well, they're good characters, but, like, if I met them in a side quest, I would probably think of them the same as I am right now. But right. I'm also pretty early in the game. And, like, the first crew gathering we had, like, my guy's like, all right, team, let's do this. And everyone's like, eh, okay, whatever. All right, cool. Like, so I feel like I still have to get to know them before I can really say, oh, yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, they really don't spend a lot of time throwing you guys together, because they literally throw you all together. You have your full squad pretty early on.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if you have your full squad now. You probably saw that achievement pop, right?
Oh yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Right. So
it's super early on.
Super early. Yeah. Like, not enough time to introduce the characters, but not like be a part of your party. And yes, as you go on, the characters, this is more like, it's a story about your group coming together. And right now where I'm at in the game, there are moments where you start to feel like a family, maybe more so than where you got in the original trilogy for Mass Effect. And yeah, you're right. Like, there are a lot of archetypes that they've certainly applied to these new characters. Like, you got your Garrus character in Vetra, who's the Turian, you know, smart alecky type person. Then you got the Asari, but they've kind of swapped it. Like, Liara is now Cora, you know, the kind of cold, closed, but opens up type character as you go. She hates my guts.
She hates a lot of people. I don't know.
Yeah, she hates me because I'm Pathfinder and she's not. You know, I try to be a friend. I'm like, you know, can't we just move past this? And she's like, I don't know, I'll do my best. And I even did her loyalty mission. It was kind of like, thanks for your help. And I'm like, fine, jeez, go away then. And then PB is PB, yeah. She's the character in this game that you love or hate, I've found. Because I know a lot of people find her annoying. I find her quirky and funny, and I'm fine with her. I like her.
See, I'm on the opposite end.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's too much at times. Like, there's some times that I'm like, oh, okay, it's coming across real well. Mm-hmm. Then there's other times, like, it just feels so forced. And it's like, okay, I get it. This is your, you know, this is who you are. Mm-hmm. You don't have to try to put that on us every line of dialogue. Like, when I'm walking through the ship, it's always like, oh, da da da. And then PB goes, yeah. And they're like, did you disagree with me? And then PB's like, nope, change my answer. Like, I think I've heard her say, nope, changing my answer like 4 different times. I'm like, okay, we get it. You want to be different from everyone else. We understand. That's cool. Nothing wrong with it. Just maybe not remind me every time I'm walking across the bridge.
Yeah, I can see that. And that, you know, that might be an issue with just the dialogue, you know, system. And you know, they supposedly fixed the banter system where now instead of it only playing once in a while, it plays like the whole damn time you're in the Nomad driving around on the surface of the planets.
Well, see, I like that banter. Like,
I don't hate it. I feel like because I haven't heard any of it, I'm getting like all of the banter in a row.
All of it at once.
It's like, this is the entire banter dialogue we have for PB and Vetra, and we're gonna go through the whole gambit of her like being all annoying and Vetra hating her, to Vetra being like, I'm sorry, to PB being like, oh, I'm sorry, and then they hug. And so yeah, PB, I don't mind her, but it's sort of similar to Sarah in Dragon Age Inquisition, where I did not like her, but some people loved her
because I see that
she was kind of the quirky, funny, har har, let's get them kind of guy. And PB's like that too. Like, she's super energetic, focused, and she's all about the remnant tech, all about exploring. And that's literally what I think the point of Andromeda is. It's like, this is a new world, let's explore it. You have Drak, who is your typical Krogan. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you could have done that differently.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So he's the typical Krogan.
What's curious about that, and I'm hoping to really interact with them more, is that when you come out of Mass Effect 2,
mm-hmm.
The Krogan that you have, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he's like fresh born, brand new, right out of a tube.
Yeah, he's...
And whereas Drak is like the complete opposite. He's like, yeah, I was around when like we blew up our own planet.
Yeah.
Like, that's so a good point. Like, I'm curious to see, you know, what's New Age Krogan, Grunt, yeah, thank you. What's New Age Krogan compared to Old Age Krogan? So, like, I'm curious to see if there's going to be a dichotomy within that, and hopefully it's not all the same.
He's got some good dialogue, and you're right, the grizzled war veteran really comes across with him, and it plays well. Yeah, I agree. And I'm thinking as I go forward, he does have some interesting moments, and he has some funny, more of the more comedic moments in the game. And it's kind of similar to the guy who doesn't get Drax. It's funny enough, Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy, he kind of has that vibe where he's very like matter of fact, doesn't get it. But then when he does something funny, he doesn't realize he's being funny. He's kind of got that shtick to him. But then you have Jahl, which is the Ungaran. And he's interesting because that experience you get in those two moments we described when you're having the first contact protocol, you get that extended experience with him as he experiences the culture of the many different races that have come from the Milky Way galaxy. So that's interesting. He's kind of weird, but once he opens up to you, he becomes a lot better. And then just moseying on through, you've got... Liam, we talked about, he's the other human, Korra, yep. The biotic. Am I missing? I'm missing one. I know I am. Is that six?
Let's see. You got Korra, PB, Liam, Krogan, Vetra, Jahl. Yeah, that's six.
Okay. So yep. That brings me to the next point. There's no Solarian on your team.
Oh, there's a pilot.
He's the pilot, yeah. And then I guess if we're counting the the extra characters, you have the pilot, which is, you know, Solarian Cat or Ket or no, Callow, sorry. And then you got the accent character, Suvi, who's the other, you know, the helper scanner person.
Yeah, you can't have somebody working on a ship who doesn't have the Scottish accent. Star Trek pretty much said, look, if there's a spaceship, mm-hmm. someone's gonna have the Scottish accent,
and so. It's gotta be someone connected to a console and doesn't appear to have legs that right? function because she's always sitting
right.
And then you have Lexi the Doctor, who is voiced by Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones, and then you have Gil the weird pilot, who's Gil kind of
amazing,
or the technician, sorry. He's kind of a dick, though, you know.
He's so trolly. I love that guy so much.
He is listening
to him and Callow like just argue over things is like makes my day at times. Like Callow's like, oh my god, I can't believe you adjusted this 3 degrees, and he's like, well, it saved me 10 hours of work, so shove it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh dang.
he's so matter of fact with Callow when it comes to what's going on. And yeah, Gil's okay, and he has some moments in the game, and his voice acting, like a lot of the voice acting in the game is very well done, and his yep. voice acting I think is one of the best in the game. You've known those people in the world who cut those corners, and they're not the type of people who cut corners and like clearly they're cutting corners to do less work. He's cutting corners to be more efficient.
Right.
And he knows he's more efficient. So he's very cocky.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah, he's got that, you know, that, yeah, I did it because I'm right. Yeah. So.
And he is right. Which makes it like, damn it, he is right. That brr, you know, you just want to disagree with him, but you know he's right. So he's good. And yeah, I mean, I'm still playing it. I'm enjoying it. It sounds like you're still playing it. You're enjoying it. But is it not sucking me in like I was hoping it would, you know?
Well, I think, like, I like that for me, personally. Because, like, I think of it like Netflix, where I'll have a show that, like, I just get sucked into, and I'm like, oh, grab my popcorn and my soda pop because this is going to be an all-nighter. I'm going to watch this entire season.
Wow.
And it's great, and I'm having games. Like, that's what Persona is for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always nice having a game that I can go back to and go, hey, you know what? I still remember what's going on. Let me enjoy it for a couple hours. I know I'm not going to, like, blaze through it, so I'll have something I can pace myself. So I kind of like having that small break from whatever I'm trying to grind through to have a game that's a little bit slower that I enjoy, that's got some good action to it. And story is, like, one of my big things in a game. And obviously, BioWare does a pretty good job with that storytelling thing.
Yeah. And I'm sort of feeling that as well with Mass Effect, where if you wanted to put your head down and finish it, you could. But I feel like you would have a tough time doing that, because there's a lot in that game. Even stuff that feels very mainline that you would want to finish as somewhat of a single player, not completionist, but of a, like, I want to do everything that's relevant. And there's a lot of it there. So you mentioned Persona 5, so I think we've dangled it long enough. Let's let's just pull it out right and let's talk about Persona 5, because I am interested in this game. Again, we were talking pre-show. This is one of those games that people talk about, that people are loving, and that, you know, love of video games is infectious for me. So I want to know about Persona 5, because I almost jumped in blind. I've never played a Persona game. I like the idea of Japanese RPGs, and I only say that because I don't think I've ever finished one, minus Fire Emblem. So I want to hear about Persona 5, and I want to know kind of what are the core tenets of this franchise that gets people so feverish for it, you know?
Well, I jumped in blind. I've never played Persona before. And one of the reasons I was really looking forward to this is I saw a gameplay demo,
mm-hmm.
and it just looked so stylish and slick. Like, the sheer visual of the game and all the menus and everything, it's got this cool black, red, and white poppy feel to it. I was like, man, that just looks so slick and it's so smooth. I'm like, this is going to be hard for this game to really mess up how cool it looks just looking at a menu. And like you mentioned JRPGs and you like Final Fantasies and, you know, the Fire Emblems and all those. I don't get that vibe from this game. Like, it is a JRPG, but it feels, I don't know, it's weird. Like, it's got the turn-based combat that you see in Final Fantasy games. Well, old-school Final Fantasy games. But I was always a fan of that. I like that feeling, too. I like the turn-based that's not forcing me to go at a fast pace. I like thinking about my moves.
Mm-hmm.
But I jumped into it just for the sheer look of it and the soundtrack. What little I heard on the gameplay thing was just, oh, I'm so in love with the soundtrack. It's got this acid jazz feel to it that is just amazing.
Cool. That sounds really good. So
yeah,
I've definitely noticed that from just the screenshots and the video, the GIFs that I've seen. It's very stylish. It's got style coming out of its ears. Now, what's the story? Like, is this, and I'm not trying to be reductive, but is this like a relationship simulator, like a Japanese relationship simulator RPG? I'm not saying that's what it only is, but I get the sense that, like, people talk about, oh, this is best girl, you know?
No.
Okay, it's not. I'm subscribing to the wrong subreddits then, I guess.
It's got a social simulator to it.
Okay.
Like, during the day, you're pretty much a high school student. You get to go around town. You can do stuff that, you know, helps your skills. You can get a part-time job. You can spend time with your friends and build relationships. So it's got that social aspect feel to it. But everything has a purpose. So if you have, like, one of the first people that you meet really early in the game, you're building relationships with him actually gives you passive abilities that really help you in combat. So for example, if you melee attack an enemy, there's a chance that if you don't kill him, this dude will jump in behind you and just crit him for just a ton of damage. But you only get that ability if you build up your relationship with him. And that applies to, like, they're called confidants. I think there's about 20 to 25 of them in the game. every confidant has like 5 or 6 skills that you can gain by building the relationship. So it's not just, oh, that girl's cute, so I want to talk to her the most. It's like, whoa, those talents, that person, like, it's pretty awesome. It's going to help me in everything that I do. So
those talents.
Yes.
No.
Talents.
No, no, no. You're actually talking about...
Yeah, no.
This is terrible. I apologize. No. I understand where you're coming from, because a lot of the times, like Fire Emblem, for example, the reason I ask is because I feel like a lot of the hardcore JRPGs have, and when I say a lot of, I mean like the one I've played, which is Fire Emblem, has like these these moments where you're interacting with characters and you're actually forming relationships, and then you can actually marry one character, and then that impacts you on the battle, mainly, you know, giving you a boost when you fight side by side. And it's very minimal, but it adds to the story where, you know, as you go forward, that's your partner and you move forward and there's story associated with that. So in this game, what you're saying is it's like Mass Effect, where you do the loyalty missions and you form a closer bond, and then all of a sudden you've unlocked the higher power that they have that was locked before because you didn't have a strong enough relationship.
Well, what's cool is, like, it's not they have this one ability that you're getting up to. Like, every relationship has up to 10 stars. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're getting an ability at, like, star 1, star 2, star 4, star... Like, it's not, oh, I gotta grind it, boom, I'm rewarded. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, I get this minor skill, then this minor skill, then this major skill, then this minor skill. It's very good at rewarding, like we mentioned earlier, the open world feel to it. This one, unlike Mass Effect, which doesn't really push you to complete the main story, this one, like, you have limited time, and every choice that you make, like, it feels like it's got a lot of weight. Like, oh, I could try to level up my knowledge skill, but I'm sacrificing time I could spend with my buddy over here, or sacrificing time that I could spend, you know, in a dungeon trying to get loot and stuff. So because you have so much or so little limited time in a day, have that weight, like, it really makes you think about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that every decision has its own bit of reward to it is great. Like, I've never felt like I've made a wrong decision, but I have felt like I could have made a different decision and come out different from it.
What's the story? So you're in high school, you're a character, it's a day yes. system, so it progresses from day to day.
Right.
What's the story in the game?
So when you're not being your typical high school student, mm-hmm. Essentially you and your friends are what's called phantom thieves. And your goal is, you pretty much, this game is all about psychology, which I love so much. To put it in layman's term, I guess, you're going into the subconscious of, like, evil people, and you're stealing their heart, which is pretty much the center of their evil desires, which has shaped them to be a bad person. And by doing so, it changes them into a good person who confesses their sins.
Okay.
yeah, that's like layman's term. The game does a much better job
playing. No, it. I'm not commenting as if you didn't explain it properly. Yeah. It just sounds that's super Japanese, man. That sounds really cool.
It is. Like, I tell people, like, I'm playing a really good anime.
Hmm.
Like, that's what it feels like. I've watched plenty of good animes. This one feels like I'm both watching, participating, and, like, playing the action-packed parts of an anime. It's so fun.
Good.
And it's weird because, like, if you could say it divided up in chapters, I'm pretty much on a third chapter, and they kind of throw a wrench in it where it's like, you've been going after bad guys, but what happens when you have to go after a good guy who's in a bad situation? Like, they really explore the gray area of, hey, is this justice? What happens when it's not a bad guy? Like, and everything that you do outside of exploring that person's subconscious to get their heart, like the side missions that are there, all centralize on the theme of that chapter. So for one of the chapters, the guy is like, He's just super mean. He's all about money. He treats people like ATMs. But you find out he was kind of bullied when he was younger. And a lot of the side missions involve people who are bullying or getting bullied. Hmm. So it feels like there's just this arching theme throughout the chapter that links very well with the main storyline of that chapter. Okay. So it feels so good. Like, it feels like an episode from an anime. It's different every chapter, but there's an overarching theme that links all the chapters together.
And it's getting really great reviews, right? It's one of those games that is getting like high nines, you know, nines, high eights, low nines, you know, it's up there, you know, even approaching tens in some cases. And the thing that, so that brings me to my next question, like combat, gameplay loop, how does that work? Is there combat? Because I haven't seen a lot of combat. I've seen a lot of like the anime side of it with the cutscenes and the dialogue. But how are you interacting with folks? Are you in combat?
Well, the combat part of it is turn-based. Pretty much it's your party, and it's kind of like a dungeon explorer kind of deal.
Okay.
But it's got a Pokemon feel to it, where personas are basically like, for you to cast a spell, you're using your persona, which is, think of it as a Pokemon that has a specific element type. So do personas. And you're fighting other personas that you can have you join, that can join your team. So it's got that cool, like, oh man, I'm fighting a bunch of like fire type personas. I better bring my blizzard type persona to counteract and do extra damage. Like, it's got that cool Pokemon feel to it where you go, oh man, I don't have that persona. I should try to capture it. So,
So the like personas are Pokemon type things.
Yeah. It's like, and that's just putting it like in the simplest terms, but to have that kind of element mixed in with turn-based, like, and again, the stylish fluidity of it all is just so amazing. And everything you do, even like it gets repetitive sometimes. Like if you knock down your opponents because you do a critical or you hit them with the opposite element type, you can pretty much do this cool party move where everybody hits them in some flashy move and then they explode. Mm. And it pretty much pops up as like an end title card, depending on which character you put. I've seen it 1,000 times, but it's so stylish and beautiful that I love it every time. It's just, it's repetitive, but it's like a good feeling kind of repetitive to it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's like one of those experiences that you could clearly skip this, but I want to see it again. It's like the Game of Thrones intro theme. You've seen it a billion
times. Oh, yeah.
I guess you haven't seen it a billion times, but you've seen it enough where you probably could skip it. You know the sun's going to spin and the tree's going to come up, but you don't because you want to see it. You like the theme music. And that's even an extended thing. We're talking about like a quick animation that you could easily skip. And sometimes you need to see it. So very stylish, very slick. It's like playing an anime. The combat is turn-based, which sounds great to me because, you know what, once in a while it's nice to lay back and have time to, oh, I need to check this tweet or I need to be distracted for a second. Turn-based combat is great for that. One last question and then we'll move into the next topic. Characters. Mass Effect is one of those franchises where you really love the characters. And that showed because it was a talking simulator. You could just sit there and talk to them. I'm not having as much drive to do that in Andromeda, but I remember in the trilogy, like, do you have any new dialogue? Do you have any new dialogue? Do you have any new dialogue? And I would run through the ship after a mission and just talk to everybody. Are you enjoying your interactions with these characters? Do you find yourself like, you know, looking forward to that next time when you can get a new morsel of content out of them?
Oh, yes. Cool. That every character is amazingly done. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's only one character that I've met so far out of like 30 that I'm like, all right, well, he's not the most interesting person, but he's still got his moments. But everyone else, like when you look at your phone and like three people go, hey, we should hang out today. There's times I'm like, oh my God, do I hang out with, I really liked their storyline and we're getting somewhere, but I mean, this person's pretty awesome, and I don't hang out much with this person. I'd really like to get, like, it's so like frustrating at times to go, man, I wish I had an endless amount of time that I could go around and talk to all these amazing characters. Mm-hmm. Like the social aspect of the game, it's not less enjoyable than the action-packed dungeon exploring. It's equally, sometimes even more enjoyable than that, just because everyone is just so well developed. And it's, oh, every time I look at my phone and three people want my attention, I'm like, oh my god, can we all just talk together?
Let's form a circle.
Let's talk about our problems.
Let's please, do a bowling team or something,
right? Like, yeah. They're so well developed, and I'm like, man, this game, like, people are saying it's 100 plus hours, and I'm like, I hope so. I do not want this game to end. It's just so good.
Cool. Well, it sounds like that should have been sort of the side project that I picked up and picked away at. And you know what? It's something I'm interested in, and I will. But it doesn't seem like one of those games that's going anywhere, and it also doesn't seem like one of those games that's going to be replaced anytime soon. Like Persona games came out every once in a while, right? They're not like one of these things that's like Persona 6 coming next year.
I think Persona 4 was almost a decade ago.
Wow.
So yeah.
So I'm gonna savor this one.
Yeah, this one, like, I'm pretty sure like 2 and 3 came in smaller increments of time, but you know, this one you could pick it up and you could definitely just enjoy it for a long time and not feel pressured that another one's coming out. Because if they spent like another 10 years to make Persona 6, then by all means, please do so. Make another one just like this.
Well, I'm glad that you're enjoying it. And I'm also glad that a lot of people are enjoying it. And I'm glad we were able to get it on the show to talk a bit about it, even if it's just for a small segment of time. So thank you, Josh, for bringing that experience to the show. Before we move into our topic, we're going to thank the patrons. Thank you, patrons. Patreon.com/thegamersin to join those other fantastic folks. Support the show directly and be rewarded for it. Like at our $2 level an episode, you get to join us for game night, another one coming very soon this month. So look forward to that. Also, if you want to keep on top of, I don't know, Fire Emblem Heroes that has certainly taken over our Discord, you can go to bit.ly/TGI Discord and join in on the fun. All right, our topic. We were going to talk a little bit about the topic I had put in here, playing non-perfect games, but I did want to touch on the fact that the NES Classic has been discontinued by Nintendo.
I know.
Man, how do you feel about this?
Well, it's North America only right now.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it was selling very well. Like, you could not find these things. And they say for the year. So I have a feeling, like, come Christmas time and probably the start of the new year, we're probably going to see an influx of them. Mm-hmm. But I also know a couple weeks ago they were talking about increasing production of the Switch. So yeah. I feel like this could just be a reallocation of resources, saying, hey, you know what? The Switch is worth more. It seems like there's a higher demand. Maybe we switch to this for now. No pun intended. You know, we switch to making much more of these, and then we'll revisit the NES console closer to the holiday season, or maybe we stock up until then. That way it's like, all right, it's Christmas time. Who's going to get the, you know, 50 consoles that we have in stores? Like,
And, you know, the thing for me, like, the statement basically boils down to throughout April, there's going to be the last shipments for the NES Classic from Nintendo of America. And to me, that dictates all of North America. You know, Canada, United States is kind of the situation right now. And they even acknowledge the fact that it's been difficult for consumers to get their hands on this, which to me, like, I was trying to tweet about this, and really it just came down to the fact that, like, this is just a huge bummer. I was able to get my hands on one, but not for lack of, like, physically planning. Like, I had the story I've told on the show before. I had to set an alarm for 2:30 in the morning to get up at 3 a.m. to order this thing online, because it went live midnight Pacific, because that's where Best Buy's headquarters are in Canada. So That's what I did to get my hands on one. Everybody else either had to wait in line, join a raffle multiple times. And to me, I don't see how that helps Nintendo. I think it only helped Nintendo if they were planning to make these until demand had run dry. Doing this to your consumers and then pulling the plug publicly like this only just makes people angry. And I know a lot of folks have been on both sides saying that, like, ooh, the NES Classic is just like, you know, one, you know, deep dive into Google to go into Raspberry Pi emulator type stuff, or it's, you know, oh well, you know, it'll cannibalize the Virtual Console, so they need to get rid of it now. But I think it works both. It works in both worlds, where you can have the NES Classic Edition as this little thing, and also have the Virtual Console on Switch. You know, I think they can both exist. And I think Nintendo is just, maybe it is the case that they had to switch to the Switch for manufacturing, and they couldn't afford to do both. And the argument can be made that there's more profit to be had from pushing the Switch over the NES Classic, because the NES Classic is a one and done type thing. Right. That being said, if I were Nintendo, I would have said, we are focusing on the Switch and we will have announcements at a later date, as opposed to saying like, nah, we done, we cool, good luck, peace. You know, it just seems, it's classic Nintendo. It's, well, you know,
I'm trying to remember, didn't they have an issue where they made too many Wiis, or is it Wii U's, where like they kind of did overproduction in a way? And maybe this is them going, hey, like, we're not saying Wii or Wii U wasn't a success, but there were times during that era people were like, oh man, Nintendo stock's going down, you know, their profit isn't exactly going up, they have all these extra consoles. Maybe this is Nintendo's way of saying, all right, we were once bit, maybe we were twice shy, let's take it off the shelves, let's see what kind of demand there is, maybe we can match that more evenly than we did with, oh, you get a Wii, you get a Wii, you get a Wii, and then everyone's like, I don't want a Wii.
The thing with the Wii is I think they had that issue late in the game as opposed to early in the game, so they didn't meet demand right away. With the Wii, they started to meet demand and then continued to develop and then flooded the market, and then you had like Walmart's full of the red Canadian Wiis. You know, with the Wii U, you definitely, they were always in stock. And with the best example in terms of recent Nintendo hardware is the Animal Crossing amiibos. They cannot sell those. They are still in store, and they are, have been slashed to ungodly low prices, and people still won't buy them. And speaking of hardware and amiibos, like, Nintendo announced like 10 more amiibos coming in the next 4 months, which is, you know, it's mind-boggling. And you kind of think, like, there's room for the NES Classic to be purchased by consumers. The fact that they don't, they're discontinuing this tells me that, like, they're clearly focused on the Switch. But to pull the plug on so many fans and then not have a strong plan in place for the Virtual Console, at least publicly, like, that seems like a huge disconnect to me. Like, to me, I would have said, like, you know, here's all of our Virtual Console information, and then a week later say we're discontinuing the NES Classic. But because clearly from a business point of view, I would rather you buy our $400 console over this $80 closed system. You know, I want to sell you further games for that thing. The NES Classic doesn't have that ability. So, but I'm also arguing the fact that the NES Classic is very cool and a lot of fun to play with those classic controllers. And I'm hoping that this is a learning experience for Nintendo, and that when they do make the NES Classic 2 or the Super NES Classic, that they meet demand and they put it in their plan to meet demand. Because I think that the part of the company that came up with the idea for the NES Classic should be rewarded, and the part of the company that decided how many they made should kind of be slapped. Not really hard, just kind of like a good, you know, like, arm thing. Just give them a good arm punch and be like, damn it, man, what are you doing?
a quick noogie.
Yeah, yeah, just
come on.
You know, like, what are you doing? There are people out there. There are children who wanted this, you know, and, well, and will not get it.
It's also kind of like a new thing. Like, when you think about, like you're saying, like, supply versus demand. Mm-hmm. You know, if 1,000 people want PS4s, Sony's going to make 1,000 PS4s and probably a couple extra more just in case.
Sure.
Maybe Nintendo is saying, all right, you know, we saw a lot of success with the NES. Maybe we're going to put out an SNES one. Maybe we want to work on a GameCube. Maybe they're doing, like, quick succession of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Without promising, because, I mean, a lot, while people will get angry that you pulled these off the shelf, a lot of people also get angry when you go, hey, you know what? We're going to make an SNES one. It's coming out in November 15th. So we're pulling the NES one off now.
Sure.
And then November 15th comes by, you're like, oh, by November 15th, we meant probably March because there's some issues. Then everybody goes nuts.
Yeah.
So like, maybe announced, what they're going is like, they're going like Assassin's Creed mode where, you know what, we're going to hit you with this one this year. We're going to hit you with this one this year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it'd be interesting if, like, that's their plan, where they're not saying, you know, we're done with generation wars with consoles. We're done going, every 3 years, we're going to make one thing, pray we can beat the other guys. Maybe they're saying, you know what, we're going to play our game. Mm-hmm. We're going to say, we're going to release this now, we're going to pull it, then out of nowhere, we're going to come up with something new that you're going to love. Then we're going to pull that, we're going to come out with another thing that you're going to love.
Yeah,
I mean, Nintendo, I think it would be really cool if they did that.
Yeah, and Nintendo isn't afraid of.
Oh yeah, no,
they're not afraid to do this. Like when they made this public statement, like I'm sure they were like, "We're going to heat for this," but they don't care. And Nintendo is a company that does not listen to people, you know. Unless, and I say that to a point where I think they'll listen to people. They've listened to the demand. They've listened to the reaction to the discontinuation, I think, and they will look at that and say, okay, clearly there's demand, and when we make another one of these next year, because why wouldn't we? They sold for $60 a pop, and we sold more than 1 million of them at launch. We'd be stupid not to. And I mean, as much as people think Nintendo's stupid, they love to make money, and they love sure bets. And a Super NES Classic or an NES Classic 2 or an NES Classic Plus, however you want to sell it, would sell like hotcakes. It's a safe bet, and Nintendo loves safe bets. Why do you think they announced yet another three, you know, Link amiibos? You can buy 10 Link amiibos. People will buy them all. You're talking to someone who will buy a majority of them.
You know, now that you mention it like that, I wonder if this is Nintendo's way of going, like, yeah, you're all talk. Because, I mean, with the Switch, everyone was like, oh, there's not a heavy lineup. We don't know the future of the games there. But it is still pretty hard to find a Switch.
Like, I haven't seen one in store.
Yeah, maybe this is Nintendo's way of going, yeah, you're going to cry a little, but when we put something on the shelf, you're going to buy it. So let's just skip the part where you're all dramatic.
Yeah, but honestly, from the NES Classic standpoint, it was very hard to find, and they sold it very quickly. And I don't want to diss people who think that who really wanted one of these and are listening to us now and kind of like, this is making me angry. And I totally feel for you, even though I have one. But when I read about the discontinuation, I started to get these like pains of anxiety, like, oh my god. Like, I'm feeling what I would feel if I didn't have one for people who really still want one of these. And not that I, you know, I don't want to sell mine. I'm happy to have it. I'm a collector. You should see my Amiibo collection. But I think that Nintendo's good for this stuff, especially when you've proven that it's a safe bet. We will get another one of these. I don't know what it'll look like. And I have a feeling that Nintendo will meet demand. If you look at the amiibos and the way they worked, like the first wave of Smash amiibos, they came out and they sold out almost immediately. And it took them a few waves to get around to the fact of finding that sweet spot where they were meeting pre-order demand, where you could pre-order one day one and get it, go into stores, find the common ones and get it. They've kind of got that sweet spot down. And I think that this is another one of those instances where Nintendo doesn't really know that sweet spot yet for this type of hardware, because they've never done anything like this. They've never offered a mini console, and these plug and play systems are not that popular. They're not the greatest things in the world.
They failed miserably in the
They do.
90s. Like,
yeah,
there was an era where every company was trying these things and it just wouldn't work.
Exactly. And you know, they're like, there and they work, but they're not, they don't, they certainly did not have an effect like the NES Classic did.
Oh no, no.
Yeah, it's weird that we're talking about it like it's a long gone phenomenon, and we're just like, back in my day, we bought our NESs small, and the controller length was 3 feet.
If there's like any like positive note to this, is that the statement, though small, they clearly say we're done for the year. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not saying we're done forever. They said we're done for this year. So while I'm pretty sure North America had a big market, maybe they had a bigger market overseas, mm-hmm. and they kind of want to supply that first until maybe. They can get more production kicking. But like, it's the smallest like announcement I think I've ever seen. You could probably tweet this out and that'd be it. But they clearly say, hey, we're done for this year.
Yeah.
So if you're still looking for one, I wouldn't get too discouraged. I would say, you know what, hold out till next year or probably the holiday season. You're probably going to see them pop back up again. Mm-hmm. Maybe even more improved. You know, I don't know if there's any glitches or anything on the one that's out now. But, yeah. You know, maybe this is Nintendo going, all right, you know what? Yeah, this was a lot more popular than I thought. Like you said, we didn't hit the mark. Because mm-hmm. the mark was much better than we thought it was. So we need to stop, build up our supply, pray the demand is still there, and release it back once more. But it clearly says this year, so I don't doubt they'll bring it back.
Yeah, the classic, I think if you look at the box, I have the box back there. If you look at the box, it has like the classic branding. It's not like the NES Mini Classic, it's like the classic. The classic is a branding, not necessarily the name of the unit. So I definitely see Nintendo coming out with another one of these. They announced the NES Classic late July, like late summer, so you know, we might have news in the coming months, maybe even E3. But to be honest, like, the timing is just really unfortunate, because they're removing what seemed like a good stopgap for the Virtual Console without the replacement for the NES Classic in place. Like, I have a Switch, but I have no ability to play my old favorite Nintendo games on the go. I have an NES Classic, so I can play, you know, the 5 or 6 really good NES games on there, but not on the go. And I'm really looking forward to when Virtual Console launches, whatever it may be.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah, one day. Soon. I have a feeling either before E3 or at E3 we'll have something. Yeah. But anyways, let's talk a little bit about what I originally put in as our topic, which was playing non-perfect games and the way that the internet sort of takes games and puts them on a pedestal and says, like, this is the best thing ever, you have to play it, and then looks at other games and says, this is not as good as perfect, therefore you're not allowed to like it. You know, Mass Effect Andromeda is a great example of a game that had gotten average reviews for good reason. I feel like there are some problems in the game to keep it from being perfect, but still enjoyable if you find that fun. And I think that's the point of playing games, is sometimes you have to find the fun, and that's okay, I think, because, you know, Mass Effect's a beloved franchise. I don't want Mass Effect to go away, and the best way to make Mass Effect go away is to shit all over this game and not play it. You know, and there are some great things in this game that I'm really enjoying in Mass Effect, and it just got me to thinking that why when a game comes out, and if you're enjoying it, you're kind of like, you feel, and we've touched on this in the show before, and it works both ways, where if you don't like a perfect game, it's the same reaction from other people, where it's like, oh, you don't like this perfect game, what's wrong with you? You know, and I don't subscribe to that belief system.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think, Josh? Like, you're playing Persona 5, which is getting really good reviews. it's not, you know, no game is perfect, but it's getting those high reviews, you know, offering more praise to it, and you're playing it. Like, how do you feel in that aspect compared to playing Mass Effect, you know, which Mass Effect isn't getting like as high a praise?
Well, for me, I guess I just don't pay much heed to it. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a friend of mine was like, hey, I'm really not a fan of this new Zelda. And I was like, you know, that's fine. Like, when I was playing Zelda, there are parts of it that I was like, me personally, I'm enjoying this. But I can see how someone can go, wow, I just went, you know, 100 yards down this road and nothing happened. Like, where yeah. I'm like, oh, the sky is so beautiful, I could ride my horse. Like, so for me, I never really invested much time and energy in listening to everyone go, oh, that eyeball for 5 seconds and Andromeda looked left while the other one was looking right and it just looks stupid. My whole game experience is ruined. It's like, you know, just take a step back and remember, this is for entertainment. Like, you're not the king of the Roman Colosseum where we're all begging for your thumbs up or your thumbs down. This was a company put their heart and soul into a beautiful game, and we should try to do our best to enjoy it. You know, stay positive about it. Is there going to be flaws? Of course there's going to be flaws. There's no perfect game out there. And if you don't like the game that everybody else is liking, that's cool. I'm all about having a good debate about a good game, mm-hmm. or in what you may think is not a good game. I just don't like the witch hunts that surround it. But it just feel like, come on, guys, it's a mm-hmm. game.
Yeah, and I remember when Mass Effect Andromeda was coming out, people who were reviewing it and talking about it in a professional light were kind of like, I kind of don't want to talk about this game because it has problems. And usually when I talk about games having problems, the internet comes out in force with their pitchforks and torches. And, you know, my barometer for angry internet is usually related to subreddits. And I need to give credit to the Mass Effect subreddit that is going above and beyond to be constructive and positive and accepting critique and you know, even sharing in those critiques and saying like, yeah, this needs to be fixed. This needs to be addressed. Let's get it fixed in either DLC, sequel, stuff like that, patches. And I'm not necessarily blaming IGN, Polygon, ourselves at the Gamers Inn, like the, you know, the quote unquote media,
mm-hmm.
in like, oh God, I hate this term, the hype train. I hate that. I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just marketing in general. Like, marketing really pumps a game up. It gets everybody excited. And then the internet as a whole gets really excited for a product, you know, and everyone, I think it brings everybody up to that level unless you completely avoid it. And then when the game comes out, you know, some of us, you know, rational human beings are like, all right, I'm cool with this. But other people are just like, oh my God, it's not perfect. What's happening? Why is everyone enjoying this game? Stop it. What are you doing? You know? And
yeah.
I think Mass Effect is a really good example because it's not a terrible game, but I can already picture conversations I could have with a few people that would be like, oh, why are you wasting your time with that? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and I actually had the conversation at work where they asked me like, how is Mass Effect? Is it as good as Mass Effect 3? I'm like, no, it's not. So what? Why are you playing it then? It's like, because it's Mass Effect and it's cool.
Still
it's
got a good game, yeah.
Base biotics. Come on, you know, yeah, I can hit on everything. Even if, you know, any alien I want, it's like boom, heart icon. You and me later. Let's do this.
I have a friend at work who's also playing Mass Effect, and like we both had a like similar conversation. We're like, okay, am I feeling the love and hype and awesomeness that I did for Mass Effect 2? No, I'm not. But you know what? This game isn't Mass Effect 2.
No.
They're clearly trying something different. They're clearly saying, look, you guys, you went from this is my galaxy, I'm top dog, I'm gonna save y'all, to, yeah, we're just strangers in the middle of nowhere. So yeah. It's not even the same type of game in that aspect.
No, and
so I just feel like the expectation that a company has to constantly hit that high is not fair. And it's not fair to those who acknowledge that that's not always going to happen.
No.
You know.
And this is the thing, like, BioWare has come out and said there are issues with this game, whether it's the development pipeline, they did needed more time, whatever it was. They haven't come out saying the reasons why it shipped like this. They just came out saying, look, this is our bad. We're going to fix it. We're committed to patching, adding free content, DLC, supporting this game for the foreseeable future. And believe it or not, companies don't need to do that. But the reason most companies do it is because they care about the bottom line and customer satisfaction, because customer satisfaction affects, future titles from that company. Like BioWare is a big name, but that name is only as good as people's opinions of it, And when BioWare, put out Dragon Age 2, this is another example of a game that got poorly reviewed, but I still adored. They took that feedback and they took it and they said, okay, let's make a better game. And then we got Dragon Age Inquisition, which was a better game. Right. And I think that's what we're going to get with Andromeda. But I think that going for the pitchforks, whether it's, not a perfect game or is a perfect game and you liked it or didn't like it, depending on what side of the fence you fall on. And on the show, we've had those conversations about Zelda where I really loved it and Jocelyn wasn't a huge fan. She still liked it, but it wasn't, she did understand why people really loved it, but she didn't love it like other people did. And right. I think that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that because everybody has an opinion and usually they're all different to a varying degree. And the game that actually I played a little bit of last or a couple nights ago was Yooka-Laylee, which is the perfect example where it was a Kickstarter, therefore a lot of marketing, a lot of hype. That's how you get a Kickstarter running, is just getting people to talk about it. Heralded as the return of the Rare platformer. Banjo-Kazooie, right. Banjo-Tooie, Donkey Kong 64. And the game they were setting up to make was those games, but remastered in a modern take. And they've done that, and it got poor reviews, and most of the, it got average to middling reviews, similar to Mass Effect. And the reason they gave most of the time when it was a negative review is because it was one of those games. It kept design mentalities that you wouldn't necessarily keep around. Like, a lot of collectibles, a lot of running around exploring, not a lot of direction, very loose mini games, but that's those games. It was sold right. as that game, and I'm enjoying it, but I went in thinking I know exactly what this is going to be and I'm okay with that. But you see online people kind of being like, oh, this is why we can't have nice things, like Banjo-Kazooie is dead after this. Like, guys, Banjo-Kazooie was always dead. Microsoft's not doing jack shit with that. And they won't, because Microsoft doesn't know how to... I don't think Microsoft knows how to bring back Banjo-Kazooie. The people who know how to bring back Banjo-Kazooie work at Playtonic Games, because they're the people who made Banjo-Kazooie.
And there's credit to go with, like, did they succeed with what they wanted to do? Absolutely. Hmm. Like, and those who really... like recognize that will say, like whenever everybody looks in the past, everything is, rainbows and sunshine.
Yeah.
And like when I think of my, N64, my GoldenEye graphics look amazing, it's great. And then you look at a gameplay video and you're like, huh, so it was that bad, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely thought it was much polished than that. And I think that's kind of why these games have trouble when they say the spiritual successor, that a lot of people have this golden image in their mind of what was, but if you really revisit it, it's like, oh, well, this is what it is, it looks better, but gameplay wise, they said, hey, we're going to make a Banjo-Kazooie, and we made a Banjo-Kazooie, except it's not called Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah. And there are games out there. We don't talk a lot about this on the show because Justin has a show dedicated to it, but Hearthstone, mm-hmm. Overwatch, a lot of games actually made by Blizzard. A lot of people love those games. I particularly don't like, I love those games, but I don't like trip head over heels for them. Hearthstone, I don't really you know, dabble. I dabble, but it's not like, it's not clearly not my thing, and that's fine. But I don't get angry at other people for loving Hearthstone. And I think that's actually something Garrett was tweeting about when it came to the Angry Chicken and loving, they're all loving, what's the word I'm looking, they're all loving Un'Goro Crater, whatever the hell the new thing's called. I can't remember what it's called. They're all loving it. But they're getting like hate emails for, you know, rage emails, like, why do you love this? It's only got dinosaur. I don't know actually what the people are saying, but I don't know. It's just the internet mentality can be weird. But a lot of positive opinions out there, right? So anyways, you were gonna say something, go ahead.
There's like when I studied psychology, and part of the new age of psychology was looking at, with social media, it's all about me, 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 I. Like, your Facebook page is, hey, this is me. Aren't I cool? Like my page. So we're getting this, hey, my opinion's cool. If you don't agree with it, you're not like me, and I don't want to hear it. Like, I'd hate to say it, but we're kind of becoming a very self-centered society. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what we're going to see more and more of. But we are starting to see more of an acceptable society. Like, where there's 1,000 people going, oh my God, BioWare, what is up with these graphics? There's 10,000 people going, look, I have faith in BioWare, so maybe you need to back off my BioWare company. So they're just... It, you're much louder when you're screaming hate than you are when you are screaming love. So,
and that's why I encourage folks to, you know, if you're on Reddit, find some positive subreddits. Like, I don't stick around long. Like, I'm this close to unsubscribing from PC Master Race every day because it's very like, it's gotten a lot better because most of it's just like shit posts that are funny, like, lol, here's my nudes, and it's like your computer open or something, because that's what you do on the internet. You post nudes. That's always my go-to favorite when it comes to the PC Master Race subreddit. It's like, look at my new pics, lol, and it's like, that's a motherboard. There are some positive subreddits out there. The Mass Effect's a really good one. I've heard middling things about the Blizzard focused subreddits because I think there's a large community there. But yeah, like Mass Effect, Fire Emblem Heroes, I really enjoy. Amiibo Canada is another good one. A lot of really positive people who aren't just blindly praising a product, but they're also not being terrible internet people. And that's really what we're talking about here, is that I think that you can play a game that's not perfect and still enjoy yourself and still enjoy talking about that game. I think we all have limited time, but that doesn't mean you only have to play games that score a 9 and above, you know, especially if a new entry in the franchise comes out and it doesn't score 9 and above, but previous titles did, like Mass Effect. I don't think you skip Mass Effect Andromeda because it didn't get a high review score. I think you make a judgment call about whether or not you want to play it, and you go from there. If you need to read reviews, that's fine. But I think that, like, I don't know, Josh, I can't speak for you, but my opinion of Mass Effect Andromeda is the same as Yooka-Laylee. If you enjoyed previous games in the franchise and want to experience that again with polished gameplay and graphics, except for animation, maybe, in Andromeda's case, but they've gotten better. You go pick it up and you play it.
Right.
You know? And you enjoy yourself. But if it was a bad game, like, we would clearly call it out for that. And I think we've been very fair about Andromeda, and not Yooka-Laylee yet, but it has some problems, but like a mini map, that'd be fantastic. You get lost a lot in Yooka-Laylee. Like, it's just this world, and it's like, here you go, here's this nonsensical cartoon world, and hope you can find your way. Guess what? You upgraded it. It's now bigger. Still no map. That's unfortunate, but anyways, I don't know if we explained that properly. We budgeted more time for it, but we rushed through it. I'll let Josh have the final word on it because he's smarter than I am, and I think he can explain it better. So go ahead. You wrap this up in a nice, tidy, smart bow. Not that I'm challenging you. You weren't challenging me, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I say, if you're interested in the game, play it. And if you didn't like it, then I would say have a intelligent or unintelligent debate with a friend who did. Because that can really open your eyes as to how people approach a game. Like, Zelda is a game where you can approach that game three or four different ways and experience it three or four different ways. And maybe the way you're playing the game, yeah, maybe it wasn't the most ideal way, and if you try someone else's, suddenly it kind of opens your eyes. And someone did that for me for Zelda, where I was like, man, there's this part of it that I'm not sure, but then they're like, oh, did you try looking at it like this? And I was like, oh, man, I'm having a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't discredit their opinion. Mm-hmm. So I say, whether you like a game or you don't like a game, or if it's a popular game or if it's an unpopular game, if it's a spiritual successor or if it's a brand new title, find someone who has an opposing viewpoint and have an intelligent conversation, and I feel like you can learn a lot more and revisit the game with a different point of view and enjoy it even further.
Yeah, and that all amazing. Glad I passed it off to you to finish that. Because I agree. I have had that conversation when it comes to Zelda. I really love that game. And on the show, we had the conversation about, you know, the negatives and positives of the game. There's a whole episode devoted to it. You can go check it out, where Jocelyn and I talked pretty in depth about The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild and had those exact conversations. And I feel like having that conversation didn't change my enjoyment of the game, but it made me understand where people may have seen faults when I saw opportunities or just looked past it. You know, it's like, this doesn't bother me as much. I'm still able to enjoy it, but I will acknowledge the fact that that is less than ideal. Like, right, all your weapons breaking, less than ideal.
Really? I loved that.
You get used to it.
I found so much satisfaction in throwing an almost broken weapon at somebody's face.
Yeah, exactly. You found the fun.
Right.
You found the fun. And finding that fun involved just saying, this weapon is dumb and is about to break. Take it to the face.
There you go.
So find
that's
the
how
fun.
That's how we end it.
Perfect.
You're having a problem with the game? Take it to the face.
Gamers Inn does not recommend you throw used games at people's faces. You could take it into GameStop. I don't know, get a couple bucks for it. You won't go to jail for that.
That's probably more
productive. Yeah, very, very much so. You could apply it to your next purchase. But that's going to do it for our topic. I want to thank our patron ad of the week, which is from Simon. Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. If you're wondering why we're reading Simon's post there, he is a patron of the show at the $7 level, which gets you an ad read in this here spot. So that's going to do it for the Gamers Inn this week. Josh, I want you to share all the fine places that people can find you on the internet.
Well, right now, it's mostly just Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm the_JDC. Don't forget the underscore. Without it, it's a weird place.
Like a now, Jewish that's discipline center or something? What was
yeah,
it?
It's weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Someone's like, wow, that's you, huh? I'm like, no, you're looking for games. Yeah, at the_JDC. That's it for now.
Good. Well, everyone go check that out, where I'm sure you're talking. You, Val, and Jim are exchanging words on Persona, I believe. So yes. It's got me very intrigued as I follow your adventures in that. And I know Val is super enjoying Persona. So we want to hear your thoughts, folks, on what we talked about this week. Persona 5, the NES Classic being discontinued. I'd love to hear from someone who really wants one of these things and wasn't able to get one, to hear your thoughts on what we shared on the show. You can do that by going to gamersinpodcast.com. Send your emails to info@gamersinpodcast.com. And if you want to find more shows on the A-Move TV network, you can find them at amove.tv, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find Jocelyn at JossPlays, myself at RMurphy, Josh at the_JDC, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/amovetv. Thanks so much for joining me, Josh. Thank you for watching, everybody, and listening. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody.
Farewell, everyone.